Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, assistant editor for Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson. Today, we are speaking with Michael Lieberman, executive director, conferences for CHI, and co-founder, VP, community and business development for Clinico about SCOPE, the Summit for Clinical Operations Executives, which will be held in Orlando and also as a hybrid event from February 7th to the 11th.
So I don't think I need to say how much I'm looking forward to SCOPE in 2022, since SCOPE 2020 was literally my last in-person conference before COVID, and this will be my first in-person conference since. And I should also mention that this will be Andy's first conference in this industry.
Wow.
He started with us during the pandemic, but I've actually got to meet him in person since then, of course. But now he gets to go to Orlando with the team.
Andy, yeah. You chose a good event for your debutante ball.
Thank you, Mike. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to just getting out of the house for once in the past few years.
Yeah.
But thank you once again for joining us, Micah. Obviously, I want to get into the SCOPE event, and you're in a new location this year.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you, Lisa, almost in person. People can't tell, but we're on Zoom and I get to see your faces, which is nice. Nice to meet you, Andy. Yeah, we moved. We've been at the same location for a little while, and it's been a great location for us, but we are at a new location, and it's a place I actually toured the last time I was there with you, Lisa, in 2020, which seems like a long time ago. So Rosen Shingle Creek is still in Orlando, not too far away. But as you know, with these kind of venues in Orlando, Orlando is a unique place, right? It's like, these are like self-contained spaceships, right? You have everything you need. So if the world ends while we are at SCOPE, we just hang tight. I think there's like 7 restaurants, 2 pools, a golf course, everything you need. So it's nice because the value of SCOPE is the interactions with people. And sometimes trying to, you know, kind of hustle 15, 20 people into a van and go find something, sometimes it's easier just to hang tight and be on site. And so I kind of like that self-contained spaceship approach to the conference venue because it works. And also the way the ergonomics or the feng shui of the venue itself are laid out, the conference hall is very central. It's a little less walking. So yeah, I'm excited. Rosen Shingle Creek, Orlando. And man, I cannot wait to see everybody in person again. I'm with you, Lisa, on that.
That's great. So I'm not a golfer, even though I wish I was, but like, could you tell us a little bit more about the inaugural golf tournament?
Okay, so confession, I am not a golfer. So all my brothers and sisters who do golf, I'm very excited to be hosting you at the event. And I probably may even wear like a plaid outfit similar to what Curly and the Three Stooges wore when they were on their golf outing. But I really have never golfed in my life. Okay, so I will tell you what I can. So the way SCOPE flows, and you wouldn't know this, but Lisa would. I just want to kind of mention the overall flow is people, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right? It's a 4-day event. Monday is kind of a jeans and running shoes type of day because people are flying in and they're kind of showing up. And a long time ago, I remember, I think it was like Christine Pierre, Bonnie Brescia, Joe Kim, a bunch of like the people who were there at the very beginning. We found ourselves kind of showing up that early day and there was nothing official going on. And we kind of started creating and it just kind of evolved organically. And then we started turning that opening day into something of its own. And it is that jeans and running shoes day. And what that means is people kind of filter in and then we kick off stuff in the afternoon with the more formal content. We have like a keynote. We have the participant engagement awards, which I'll talk about later. And then we have kind of an informal reception around the pool. And this year, for the first time, we're actually using that AM to midday window for the golf tournament. And it's not an enormous one. I think it's a limited number of people. People get to sign up and companies are sponsoring holes. I think it's a standard structure, but I can't talk golf without sounding like a fool. So that's all I'm going to say.
I can hit a ball. I don't know if I can hit it really well, but I know I can eventually hit it.
Okay. What outfit are you going to be wearing?
I don't know. I saw this woman on TikTok and she had this new outfit on and it was, I don't know. Yeah, but
no,
we'll see.
I think golf. Yeah. I think it's going to be fun. And then some of the people who are not golfers are still going to be there afterwards. We're going to do alcoholic drinks, whatever you want out by the pool. It's nice if you're coming from Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Seattle. I got to tell you, every year I fly into Florida around February, early March for scope, and I get off the plane and I'm like, there's a little humidity in the air. There's broadleaf evergreens. There are flowers. And you're just like, oh, this is amazing. It's not the reason to be there, but it is a nice kind of add-on to like, hey, I'm here to do business. I'm here to learn. I'm here to kind of network, make the most of it. And it's just, I don't know, it's pleasant. So adding golf, great. I'm all for it. So it's our first time. I hope we do a good job. And I think we're going to do a good job. We have a lot of people working on it. I think it will be a great thing for people. And then we'll do it again if it works. Yeah.
Excellent.
Very cool. I will just end the golf conversation with this.
Thank you.
If it's a mini golf tournament next year, then I'll definitely be in that. But golf, forget it.
I didn't bring that in. I did. That's the last time I did golf was Los Angeles miniature golf. The one where the clown opens its mouth and closes its mouth and you have to time it.
Yep.
Yeah. I nailed that.
So following on the new golf tournament this year, what else is new for the in-person attendees that we can look forward to this year?
That's a good question, Andy. I will say this. I think some stuff is the same structurally, right? We've got a great formula. We've been doing this for so long. We just really have a big team in the background, meeting planners, marketers, salespeople, all these people in the background just trying to optimize what is this giant event, right? So I will say that some things are the same, but I still want to talk about them and some things are new. Okay, so what's new first? First, biggest thing, per Lisa's point, is we're back in person. It's been a while. When we did Scope in 20, we literally, I don't know if you remember, Lisa, we made it through by the hair of our chinny chin chin. Yeah. I flew home and all of a sudden, you know, stuff started hitting the news. You know, so I think that some of the things that we have all taken for granted that are quote unquote were normal are still there, but those are going to feel new. And I'll mention those. What is truly new, if you've been to Scope for 13 years and you've been coming every year and you've kind of seen the evolution, golf truly new. I think this year also the way we're doing some of the keynotes is a little different. We have a different mix. We have also some more morning events. Traditionally, mornings have been show up, grab your coffee, get into the meat of. There's a lot of content at Scope. We are a content-centric organization through our DNA. I mean, if you look back at our portfolio of conferences, most of them are deeper life science, right? Scope is getting further to the right, further downstream into clinical operations, clinical trials. And if I look at it, it was traditionally you would come down in the morning and you would get into the content. You would go to say, hey, I'm a recruitment guy. You know, I'm a data-centric gal, I'm going to that room. That's what I'm interested in. And you dove in. We definitely are trying to also allow people, we know that there's only so much you can learn in a certain amount of time. As in, you know, if you look at, you know, kind of the way people learn, we could only give you so much content. People want that. It's valuable, but we also have to break up the learning so that people have the ability to kind of breathe and not get fatigued. So we also have read the surveys and people say, I really actually learn a lot in an interactive format. So some of the things that are different are the way we kind of set up the schedule. I don't know if you would even notice it, but we've definitely optimized some of that timing to allow people the ability to get between sessions. And then we break it up. There's a bunch of intensity with learning presentations. And then we kind of break that, allow you to go into the hall, network with the exhibitors, because let's be honest, so much is actually happening in the vendor and supplier space nowadays in this space, you know? And so the hall is a learning environment in and of its own. So we're trying to create some interactivity there as well. But let's go to what I think, if you're newer to Scope, like you are, Andy, and you're looking at the way the 4 days flow, you have kind of everyone together. Even if they have different interests and expertise, they have a different functional expertise, we have something in common. So we try to bring everybody together. And that is in the form of, hey, plenary keynotes. This may not be exactly relevant to your job, Andy or Lisa, but it's still compelling to you. So we try to kind of mix and match the keynotes in a way that is inspiring, but also practical and of interest to everybody. Okay, we're all together. We're a unit. But then we let you go break out into your groups. And there's like 22 conference tracks this year. I mean, I could rattle off the topics and I probably want to. And then we pull you back in. We're like, you're done with that. Now let's do coffee together in the hall. So there's this kind of coming together, breaking apart. And we kind of have this inhale, exhale kind of approach to the way it flows. And that's every day. And end of the day, more social value in and of itself. I got to tell you, a lot of collaborations, really meaningful collaborations, company tie-ups, purchases, all kinds of agreements have happened at Scope over coffee, over wine. That's meaningful. And I'm proud to say that. So I think if you're there, you would probably feel at first a little overwhelmed if you hadn't been there and didn't know how things flow. You would have to kind of choose your route. And what I would tell you is to say, all right, Andy, go here. And then afterwards, you have a you have a point in this little decision tree. Now you have 11 rooms to choose from. You can track hop and kind of go circle individual presentations and, you know, but in some ways I'm like, go to the room that you want to learn and go sit there for an hour and a half, stay in it, be a part of it and participate in the discussions, raise your hand, ask the question, because it can be purely I'm absorbing information. But I think the speakers, the faculty, the people in the room gain a lot when you as an attendee raise your hand and say, how did you do that? Why did you do that? I disagree. I agree. So anyways, I think if you're new, everything's new. If you're a veteran, I think some of what you see, only a little bit would be truly new. But what's different is topics change and they evolve according to what's happening in the industry. That's the most important thing. First of all, it's always changing, all new content, all new people. Secondly, you may not notice how we optimize the schedule, but maybe your feet will, maybe your mind will, you know, benefit. But anyways, I don't even know if I answered your question, Andy, but I love talking about Scope.
You answered it, Micah, but you also kind of answered my next question. So I'm going to skip over that question, but I am.
Tell me what it was.
It was about making decisions. How do you make decisions?
Oh, that's funny.
About the conference, you know, because like you said, if you haven't been before, there is so much good content to choose from. So, and I will also say that, Maggie, you're right. When you're in that room and you ask questions, number one, it's so relaxed. I've never been at a conference where asking questions was the most relaxing thing, and so appreciative by both the speakers and the audience, and they will build on what each other say. And it's really just very, what's the right word? Not collaborative, but collegial.
Yeah, it is collegial. And thank you for saying that. It is a good vibe because these people are experts, man. Everyone there is top of their field. These are the people making things happen. The stuff we see in the news, these are the people behind the scenes. They know their stuff. I think also people who, by definition, have mastered something, therefore have self-esteem. Maybe I'm talking as a parent watching my kids play soccer. But what I'm saying is that they're comfortable in what they know and what they don't know. And they have a shared end game, even if they're competitors. You're from BMS, I'm from Pfizer, whatever. You know, Andy's from, it doesn't matter. Often we've worked together in the past. Let's be honest. We've probably all worked together at some company in the past. We know each other, we respect each other, but we have a shared goal, a shared end game. And if you can share some tips with me and I can share some tips with you around process, I'm not giving away any crown jewels, any intellectual property. We're all doing well. And if I can tell you something that helps you do your job better, hey, great. Maybe that in the end, the patients benefit and we all win. So I think that vibe, that atmosphere, we design it. And one thing, Andy, too, I didn't tell you is, when you go into your track room, it's a small enough group. It's not just hundreds. It's a small enough group. And in that room, everybody is only interested in X, whatever that is. So it is what Lisa said, you know? So making the choices is hard. And there is one caveat too, is sometimes, for example, on the breakout discussions, which are the Tuesday afternoon, very informal, interactive breakouts, basically of people, 15, 20 people sitting around a table with a glass of wine, right? No slides, no heavy structure, just a topic at hand. Is I tell people, I say, choose a table where you really want to talk about it, or choose a table where you know nothing and don't be shy that you don't know anything. Just maybe you're quieter at that table, but it may be an opportunity for you to go to a topic where you can learn something which is not your expertise, but you may want to know more about it. So as part of a team, you could be more informed. Your colleague down the hall handles that piece, but maybe you could speak more intelligently to that. So maybe back to my recruitment example, maybe I'm a recruitment expert, but I don't join that table. I might go down and join a table which is very deep analytics because it's not me. So I guess it's a kid in a candy store type of problem, Andy. And Lisa's been there. She knows it. Lisa, when you're there, how do you do it? Because you're covered. You have an editorial role. So your choices are actually tougher.
So how do I do it? Well, it is tough, Micah, because like I said, you have such strong content and I do jump around. I'm a track hopper. And so I just try and maximize that. And also to your point, outside in the hall is a lot of business. You know, I meet with a lot of our advertisers. I ask people for ideas. If I find someone that's just giving a presentation, I just rush up afterwards. You know how everybody stands there with the business cards. I don't know. Are we doing business cards this year? But, you know, everybody runs forward and, you know, I draft them for articles or for interviews and that kind of thing. So, but I like that idea about, you know, just immersing yourself in a breakout and just learning something that you've never learned, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes also like, you're like, I don't know anything. What is a biomarker driven trial and how does that relate? Well, maybe jumping on the table and nodding your head and not being shy about the fact that you don't know, it's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I don't think anybody there would be like, you don't belong here. They'd be more than happy to jump in and tell you everything they know, you know?
Yeah. Agreed.
So in your experience, Micah, as you're putting this together and dealing with all the professionals and the clinical operations executives that you know, what has been one biggest takeaway from the pandemic that you've heard over and over just about their biggest challenge, what they're most interested in? What's the thing that you're hearing?
That is such a big question.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny, Lisa? I would answer it differently. Phase one, year one. Look how long it's been going on. So think of your daily experience as a parent, as a person, or a person in clinical research. My answer 6 months in to the pandemic versus a year, they're slightly different, right? So anyways, that's kind of a philosophical statement, but it does. Okay, shoot, this is a big question. Let's talk on the positive. I'm going to try to answer this without using the word unprecedented times, okay? Because we can't say that. That's just overdone. Yeah. Okay. So I mean, I'm going to try to be positive. Here's what's interesting. I'm looking back on Scope and I'm looking back on years ago, people that you know, Hassan Kadim, Kelly McKee, Ken Getz, Jason LaRoche. I could name Adama Ibrahim, Michelle Shogren, Bonnie Bershaw, all these people. And I still want to mention Christine Pierre because I love her and she was a big mentor of mine and she's no longer with us. Joe Kim, Craig Lipson. I can go on and on and on. But when I talk to these people, and some of them have changed jobs 5 times since they were early advisors on Scope, but they have a big picture. I would say that what's interesting too is some of them were early on people pushing for things we are now seeing. The concept of decentralized trials, and again, these are buzzwordy. They were buzzwords, but buzzwords become real, right, over time. So these are early adopters. These are innovators. These are people who way back then were saying, what the hell's going on? Why aren't our trials patient-centric? How are we not asking patients about the burden of this protocol on their life? And so early days of Scope, 13 years ago, if I look at the Department of Clinical Ops, whatever these people's titles were at the time, my audience, let's generally say, I don't want to say they were disrespected, but I would say they were closer to the patient. And so they would often have ideas and things to say, and they would have to go into the larger R&D organization and advocate for themselves, whether that means budget, maybe more manpower, FTEs to execute something, whatever it was, whatever that means. Fast forward now, you look at a lot of the stuff they were saying, and it has come to pass, man. It is happening. So that early days, pie in the sky, why can't we do it this way? Why can't we draw samples? Why can't we send a nurse to somebody's home? You know, but do you remember Ken Getz's that study he did? I think it was like 8 or 9 years ago, he presented that at Scope and BioIT World, showing how much each amendment within a protocol cost. At the time, I think, I'm just guessing, it was like $500,000. Now, adjusted for inflation, it's like Bitcoin numbers now. So if you look at this stuff, these people were right? They were pushing, but they had to be the innovators who were pushing into the organization. You do need champions to do this. So going back to how I think this is positive is COVID just lit a fire under all of these things. And some of these things required a high up executive to say, you got the green light, man, do it. Let's go, let's go, let's go. The FDA was a good partner in this. They wanted the experimentation. I mean, last year at the virtual version of Scope, when we had Pfizer, the whole team at Pfizer giving like an hour and a half story of people from different departments. Here's what we did. Man, I showed that to my kids. It showed under the hood how complicated this is. But being positive, I think all of these things were happening. I mentioned 13 years ago, I name dropped a bunch of fun people. I probably left so many people out, but these are just names off the top of my head. People that just literally flashed into my mind that have helped me. Have been advisors at Scope, been presenters, and they've evolved throughout. But all the things they were alluding to way back when, then tried to make happen, then had to be an advocate for, then had to take risk and push in their organization. All of those things, COVID was an accelerant. It allowed this stuff to go. So I'm trying to be positive because it's been a really, frankly, a crappy few years, right? Let's be honest. So for people emotionally, everything. But professionally, I think this industry maybe is getting some respect, some good press. I mean, again, you're not going to overcome people who are into conspiracies and stuff. But in general, regular people know what a clinical trial kind of is. So I don't even know if I answered your question, but I wanted to try to spin something positive because my answer a year ago versus now is a little different.
No, I totally understand. I totally get it. And you're right. This has been a evolving topic, you know, and now it's being tied all together because of all the capabilities you can achieve with decentralized trials, and you can achieve the patient centricity and the diverse populations and everything. So what we're looking forward to this year is seeing more case studies and actual life presentations around all of those things that fall under decentralized trials and really making it live for our readers. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that.
Oh, there's a lot. And there's a whole track called that, but you know, it's everywhere. If you look in, you know, the data tracks, look at the real world data tracks, you look in the supply chain, I mean, everything, it's relevant to all of it. Also, you alluded to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we started talking about that at Scope years ago, mainly in the context of the patient engagement and patient recruitment people, right? Those were the people that had a job function, had a passion usually. Some of them came from advocacy, right? Now, you know, again, going from something being new and having kind of a small footprint in a smaller functional area, and it grows over time. I think if you look at some of the keynotes and some of the talks relating to diversity, equity, inclusion, I think they're broader now. I think it's more about how do we make this a reality within a broader R&D organization? How do you integrate this into our thinking and our beyond just trial design and patient cohorts, right? And I'm not saying it's solved, but man, it's being talked about. It's starting to be addressed. It takes time for change. And I think that's a positive. And one of the keynotes, I got to look at the website to make sure I don't butcher some of the stuff that's, so there's definitely within the keynotes page at Scope, you could see some of the stuff relating and related to engaging and understanding patients and their behavior, improving accessibility. We have a cool dual keynote with Janssen and Pfizer, more about data operations and a post-pandemic world, but you'll see a few things there. One is, I just want to call out related to that, is Meg McKenzie from Genentech talking about why advancing inclusive research is a moral, scientific, and business imperative. Cool. Can't wait. Immediately followed by a panel discussion. This is a good title and it says a lot. And I'll give Kimberly the credit for this. Implicit bias around advocacy and decision-making, metrics of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and speaking the language of business and leadership. Now, the moderator of that panel is Kimberly Richardson, and she's a research advocate and founder of the Black Cancer Collaborative. And she has a great panelist, including Kareem Watson, who is now, Dr. Watson is now the chief engagement officer at NIH, new job. Monique Phillips, who's a recruitment specialist at BMS, veteran of Scope. And then Dr. Nikhil Wagle, who is a professor at Harvard Medical School, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And I dropped their names because they're a different group. They're not all pharma, right? It's a diverse group. But if you look inside of what Kimberly's panel title is, she understands that pharma is an industry and the plane is moving. You can't land the plane and fix it. You got to like kind of fix it while it's going, right? So you have to be able to be realistic and say, where do we want to go? And at the same time, how do I actually position this as a way where I can gain champions within the business to say, this makes sense, not only from a moral imperative, but this is good for the business. And so anyways, I wanted to mention that because earlier you asked way two questions ago, what's new? This isn't new, but I think its positioning is new and that it's bubbling to the top and going across functions more now. So that's a new thing.
I would agree with you 100% there, Micah, for sure. So as an executive director of a conference organization in biopharma, what was the biggest takeaway of COVID for you?
I think, again, I don't want to be negative. I am an extrovert. I'm a people person. My job is really a lot of market research, industry analysis, reading and interviewing people. I think, Lisa, you and I both have a journalistic approach to our content. We like people. They share. Like, but the truth is the fun part of my job is having those relationships and connecting with people. And I'll talk to people for a year. I feel like I know them and I've never met them. And then we meet on site. Missing that component of not, like, again, year one, fine. Year two, I started losing my patience with COVID. That's a petty statement, but I'm just being humorous because as a parent, watching my kids, watching the school struggle. So for me as a conference guy, there's bigger things in the world than conferences. We got bigger problems. But in my little world of this conference, which is very meaningful, and it's a very engaged community, and the power comes from that community. It's not me. I'm just a little kind of networker hub trying to pull this together. I think I'm at a point where I really want to be in person. That's me being Micah, the extrovert, loving all these people, having fun on site, seeing it come together. I'm really proud that we pivoted. We have been able to deliver a lot of training and a lot of conferences during the pandemic. We've survived. It's been tough. We created a really viable online virtual platform. Success. Great. Some people, because they're immunocompromised or other reasons, can't come to Scope. We're still able to serve them. Proud of that. But I personally, walking away, is I think we need the in-person interactions, especially in this space as you go downstream towards the patient. I think I'm not going to make fun of my more scientific conferences because they are deep content. But I think in some ways, I could be very effective delivering that content through traditional modules, training modules. I could do it. Scope, I think eventually we have to be in person and we have to be able to have those organic interactions, which lead to new relationships, deeper relationships, and trust. I'm just, it's real. I love connecting people. I can't tell you how many people at Scope have found new jobs, have found new companies, bought companies. This is a real thing. And in the end, it accelerates the entire ecosystem, right? So I don't want to say that the virtual thing's going away. I think it's going to be here forever. But I personally have taken away that we need to be back in person. And I don't know if I should be saying that, but that's how I feel. I just really feel that.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that a number of times, you know, and speaking with people, you know, it's okay to be hybrid and it does take a lot of planning to be successful hybrid. You know, it's a different level, but I agree with you on the serendipity, you know, just chance encounters, organic conversations that just pop up. You know, that's hard to achieve on a Zoom call. I still think it's a little bit less. Well, it's not serendipitous by any stretch because you've already invited everybody that's going to be, but you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to go.
Yes.
So I was going to ask you about Clinico.
Oh, cool. Thank you for asking. It's probably a little early. So Dr. Marina Filshtidsky is my partner in crime on Scope. Everybody knows Marina. They know me. And our president is Phillips Cool. And then Dr. Odella Regan, Ben Lakin. There's a bunch of execs in my company, which is Clinical Innovation Institute, which is CAII, which is CHI, Cambridge, you know, Cambridge Health Institute. I just said CII. That's so funny. I said clinical. It's Cambridge Innovation Institute, my parent company for like 17 years. And then CHI, Cambridge Health Tech Institute. But what's funny, Lisa, is a lot of people think our company is Scope, but Scope is an event inside of our company, et cetera, right? So, and that's fine. We own BioIT World and PEGS, the Protein Engineering Summit. We have all these great long-running communities and conferences, and Scope is one of them, and that's in the clinical research space. Now, Marina and I have been in this space a long time. We have great relationships. We've been enjoying it. Your previous question is one of the takeaways from COVID. This new company is a new company, and it is one of the takeaways. So Marina, especially, you know, and I talking to our execs, you know, watching the trends, watching technology and innovation disrupt piece by piece of other industries. And within pharma, pharma by nature is a very conservative industry. You know, we saw a problem, which was, you know, Scope is trying to solve, which is how these partners find each other, right? How do I find the right vendor? How do I find the right partner? And if it may be that I'm a sponsor organization, a mid-sized biotech, I need a CRO and I need five different sub-vendors to actually execute my trial. The way this has been done historically, the way that pharma has done vendor selection and evaluation and contracting is very clunky, to be honest. So we just saw a need and we heard it over and over from a lot of very wise people in this space. Man, there's a need for this, which is a B2B marketplace. So we are building a B2B marketplace for clinical research. I don't want to say it's the Yelp of clinical research because it's not that simple. It's not a Chinese restaurant. These are services, not products, right? But we are building and we are actually in development with our engineers right now. And it is a fully owned subsidiary of Cambridge Innovation Institute and Cambridge Health Tech Institute. So kudos to our bosses and our owners where they said, go for it. Let's do it. So we have the funding. We have an amazing advisory board, and we are actually building this and with the engineers right now, which is a B2B marketplace for clinical research so that qualified people in this space can search and find qualified partners, evaluate them, and likewise, the vendors can be found and say who they are. So I think Scope is solving a lot of this, and we're also trying to actually build a technology platform, which is its own company, to be that marketplace. So we'll talk about it a lot more. Yeah. I'm hoping, excellent, you know, we have a beta and coming out in spring, and we're going to kind of keep a little quiet about it until it's really clean, but it's a big deal and I'm proud of it.
Very cool. Sounds like a great idea.
Cool. Thank you for asking about that, letting me give that plug.
So, you know, now we're going to start winding down here, and, you know, just to wrap up this last question I have, Micah, I think I know the answer to this based off how our discussion has been so far, but what else is on your plate, you know, either business or, you know, stuff going on in your own life for this upcoming year of 2022?
No, that's funny. Yeah, man. Again, got to stay positive, right? I can give my litany of complaints, like end of the world stuff, right? Yeah, that's funny. So definitely busy, obviously, like everybody. Welcome to America, you know, and so my work time is really Scope and our broader portfolio of conferences and then the startup, Clinico. So I guess I have in servant of two masters, right? Shakespeare. So I actually live in Ashland, Oregon, by the way. Everybody thinks I'm in Boston. I should divulge that. I'm in Ashland, Oregon, which is in the southwest of Oregon, the Rogue Valley, this beautiful area, and it's home to the Shakespeare Festival. So I had to give a Shakespeare reference. So I'm currently the servant of two masters, both my conference business and now the startup. So that's what's going on there. In my regular life, I try to stay human. I feel like I'm an amazing parent. I got to make sure my kids don't hear me say that. But definitely, I've learned a lot and I'm trying to evolve as a parent because my kids, I have two teenage girls and they're amazing. And my wife and I have fun parenting, but I'm in a different space. And this space, this kind of transition from being kids to teenagers and miniature adults happened during COVID. So it's just a weird ass time. And I didn't use unprecedented times. I used weird ass time for this to have teenage kids at home. So I have been, my wife and I, my kids, we're all pretty social. We have a house with lots of people passing through. We do a lot of camping. We host parties. We do a lot of cooking. We're a fun crew. COVID has really messed with that. Positively, I think, you know, it's helped us, especially in the beginning of COVID when we were all excited and we're like, we're doing jigsaw puzzles. We're going to go onto YouTube. We're all doing yoga together every day. Look at my muscles, Dad. And, you know, I'm like, hey, look at my abs. Punch me in the stomach. Like, we're amazing. 4 months later, you're tired of each other. Things change. So I think what's on my plate, I think survival, man. I think that's about it. I think survival's on my plate. I got to financially survive. I want to be a good parent without losing my mind. And I do want to try to continue a big thing that we've always done. We've been big travelers. My wife and I, since I've been young, we've been big backpackers, international travelers, back, all that type of stuff. That's one of our values. We used to leave for the winters. We would take our kids to Mexico so they could learn Spanish. That stuff's off the table. So you kind of have to, again, that's me being the spoiled, the champagne problems of like, oh, I can't go to Mexico with my kids. But it has really forced us into a smaller box, right? You're forced to look at yourself. You're forced to look at your kids. And some of those relationships are strained. So that's what's on my plate, man. Survival as a parent and trying to help my team. Again, 2 years out of my life, whatever, Andy, you're young. It's bigger for you. For me, 2 years, whatever. I've had a great life and I'll get back to it. But if you're 15, you're 16, you're 17, those are super informative years. So I think my focus has really been on my kids a lot. I focus on them the more they hate me. So I better just maybe let them roll, man. Just
no.
Let them be.
This has been so much fun, Micah.
Yeah. It's been fun.
I can't wait to see you.
I can't wait to see you too. So everybody show up. Don't show up and pop in and pop out. When you come to Scope, show up Monday morning or Sunday night. Don't answer work email. You're there for a big reason. Make the most of it. Come and make the most of it. It is up to you as an attendee or an exhibitor. Get what you want out of it. Just like we're talking about with the things we're talking about jokingly around our own households during COVID. It's like, make of it what you can. So Scope is there. There's a lot of content. But come Monday and stay all the way through. I stay the whole weekend. I just hang. So I'm excited. Excellent. Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we did a great time.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and Andy, we won't talk about golf next time. We'll leave that one out. We'll talk about Scope, food, kids, adventure, and the clinical research industry as a whole. All positives. Good to see you both.
And you too.
You too, Micah.
Thank you for having us. When I say us, I mean just my whole team's not here, but there's a lot behind me. I get to be the voice, but there's a whole bunch of good people making this happen.
What if you had limitless access to customer insights, accelerated timelines, and set fees? At True Serum Network, we're fueled by connections in virtually every area of healthcare as part of MJH Life Sciences. The result? Audience-fed creative and more powerful content in less time. True Serum Network, releasing what's real. Find out more at TrueSerumNTWK.com.